there are only two really sort of legitimate ways for men to express emotion in our culture. It's through anger, and then there's sex.
2067 is a podcast about the future, seen through the lens of emerging research interests at Concordia University. Can we use university research to imagine new possibilities? Can we speculate along with researchers about what's next? What's in our future? This is 2067. The study of what it means to be a man. Today's men's studies is grounded in feminist theory and a variety of academic disciplines. It's a relatively new area and in general proposes multiple models of masculinities. There are many ways today of being male, and all are socially constructed. In this episode, I talk to Marc Lafrance about masculinity studies and about the future of brawn and the presumed crisis of masculinity. Women, men, queer, transgender, are we witnessing a major reset?
We are. And I think that that reset is the result of a lot of different social movements and a lot of major political shifts. There's no question in my mind, if you do a sort of very quick historicization of the last 3-4 decades, we've had a number of movements that have forced us to rethink gender and sexuality. We've had the feminist movement, which got us to think about how femininity is socially constructed, and by extension, how men are socially constructed, how masculinity is socially constructed. And then, of course, we had the gay and lesbian movement. So that's another reason for the reset. We've had major political shifts and economic shifts, right? We've watched North American society go from one that was, if not based upon, very, very strongly informed by a robust manufacturing sector, forestry sectors, agricultural sectors. And in those sectors, what did we find? Primarily men's work. If men wanted to be economically mobile, care for a family, be able to support that family, etc., then a good, robust, blue-collar manufacturing job would get them there. And according to many of those who forecast into the future, those jobs aren't coming back. Among men, there seems to be a deepening divide or gulf between those who are willing to say, we gotta rethink masculinity. The old stuff isn't working anymore. At the very same time, we've got this extraordinary look backward that has an aggressive, nasty, angry edge to it.
Feminism, I think, a lot of women, even who don't call themselves feminists, have bought into it because it was such a vast movement that you couldn't resist. But for men, it's not that obvious, it seems to me, because it's still the world's your oyster. If you're a man still today, not that much has changed. I mean, for certain categories of men, certain social classes, things have changed. But the idea of rethinking masculinity is not catching on that much, is it?
If we had met a few days after Justin Trudeau's election, right, and had discussed what that election might have said about masculinity in Canada today, we would have been much more optimistic, right? Mm-hmm. Because Justin Trudeau, whether we like what he's doing or we don't like what he's doing, the fact of the matter is he's doing masculinity differently as a leader. There are only two really sort of legitimate ways for men to express emotion in our culture. It's through anger, and that gets channeled through sports and also through just brute violence, right? And then there's sex. And that's the only sort of viable option for showing emotion is through sexual conquest. Now, the fact that men also actively perpetuate these norms and values, that's half the problem too, right?
Do men themselves feel the constraints? I mean, to go back to the parallel with feminism, I mean, that's what was the beauty of the women's movement. I mean, every woman knew what it meant to be afraid to speak in public or to walk down the street. Every woman had a very clear idea of those constraints, mm-hmm. those shackles, and wanted to get rid of them. It seems that men do not have the same consciousness of their own constraints, of their own shortcomings.
I think that men have a lot of distance to travel before they share the same awareness of the impact of their gender identities and their performances of gender on their lives. I think there's more work to be done there. That said, there is always the age-old problem of the fact that a small group of men benefit in no small way from these norms. Mm-hmm. and from these codes and these conventions of social life.
Is this a total, the crisis of masculinity, let's put it that way, is this entirely a modern situation? This has never happened at any other time in history.
Actually, when you look at the history books, what you find is that these so-called crises of masculinity are surprisingly cyclical. Around the time of World War I, about a quarter of the men who presented themselves and said, I'm willing to serve for my country, about a quarter of those men were deemed physically unfit and unable to do the work of being a soldier. This ignited a real moral panic around men and their bodies and what they were capable of. Around the time of World War II, I think it was, if my memory serves me correctly, about half the men who tried out were deemed unfit. So yet again, we hear all across society these amazing sort of headlines, newspaper columns, you name it, talking about the fact that what are we going to do? Our men aren't as strong as they used to. They're getting soft. They can't defend us. They can't protect us. And then look at around, I don't know, the time of the 1980s with this movement of real men don't eat quiche. Real men, you know, and that was the time of the Iron John book as well. Robert Bly's book on the mythopoetic men's movement and the need to return to the sort of the primitive man. Here again, 2008, we have the financial collapse. What's happening to our men? They can't get jobs. They can't stay employed. They're not performing in school.
But it's the first time it seems to me that that the crisis entails thinking that the problem with men is not having better, stronger men. It's rethinking men altogether. That's a first.
That's quite right. That's absolutely right. And we're also naming it as a crisis of masculinity, not just a crisis of men being soft or men not being strong enough, men not being good soldiers, men not being good workers. Those are all code for a crisis of masculinity. The important thing that I want to communicate to the men that I'm speaking to is getting involved in rethinking masculinity doesn't mean flushing vital components of who you are down the toilet. It doesn't mean that. What it means is flexibility, acceptance, openness. You can be whatever kind of man you want, just as long as you're tolerant of and accepting of other men doing masculinity in whatever way they want. That's the future.
So are we or are we not moving towards a genderless future?
There's a lot of empirical evidence that suggests that no matter which way I answer that question, I'm both right and wrong. If you look at things like the number of children who present to gender identity clinics, now child-level gender identity clinics, with serious concerns around their gender identities and wishing to be known as a different gender than the one to which they were assigned at birth. I mean, it's sextupled over the course of the last 10 years, right?
So why hasn't this come up before? It's hard not to think that there isn't an effet d'entraînement, that there, it's because you read about it and you say, oh, maybe I should try that. Is it that we're really asking ourselves profound metaphysical questions?
Well, I think it's both of those things. But I think the profound metaphysical questions can't be discounted. Another really important sociological trend here, which is the rise of individualism and the rise of this is how I feel, this is what I want, and this is what I'm going to get, right?
My last question, and I'm thinking, okay, 2067 here. Will it take women being in the seats of power, and this is a bit of a wink to the American election, will it take women to be where men have been, really in the seats of power, before men rethink masculinity to a profound extent?
I think what's actually going to change men and what's going to induce them to rethink masculinity. It's going to be quite pragmatic. It's going to come down to situations whereby you have, say, for example, a father who's a single parent and he's got two children, and for whatever reason, his ex-wife isn't on the scene, or if she is, she plays a minimal role. He's working wild hours. He's also caring for two children full time. He realizes there are no supports for him as a single father. I see fatherhood as being one of the main vectors of change.
We're going to use an ordinary garden variety peach with its short, close fuzz and tender skin, and a regular regimental hairbrush with its rough, tough bristles to prove to you that the man-sized Remington electric shaver will give you a close, comfortable shave, no matter how tender your skin.
I'm interested in questions of body image and body modification and the role that the body's boundary plays in all of this. And so the skin is, I think, more important than it's ever been. It's certainly more visible than it's ever been before.
Not only on women, on men as well.
That's right. Men's skin is more visible than ever before, especially if you consider the very important craze around epilation now for men. Other things that are on the rise, tattooing, mm-hmm. piercing. There's a way in which our skin is becoming this sort of very, very important canvas. It's a term I've already used, but it's becoming this sort of this site upon which we chronicle who we are in a very, very self-conscious way. So I'm intrigued by what that means. Could it be connected to the rise of individualism that we were just discussing? This way in which I want my body to define me.
But the death of the hairy chest, does that mean that in fact men are changing in terms of the old myths and the old models?
There's no question that when you look at men's aesthetics and the way that their bodies are now sort of curated, but does that mean that things are being done more progressively? Does that mean that ideals of masculinity are changing, or are they just being repackaged?
Well, it's fascinating to see that in all the changes that are being offered to men, that the one that they're actually open to, the most open to, is the exterior one, changing their bodily looks. But is that a testament to actual change or the power of the ad industry and the, like, we know what it does to women, so it might be just doing the same to men. Though I think for men to undergo that is, in a way, a profound change.
It is, because for a long time, the emphasis on physical appearance was one that women were expected to sort of shoulder and manage. And it was not masculine to fuss over your appearance.
So if I was to ask you to choose one of the old-time values or characteristics of men that you really like and one of the new, what would that be?
I like the link to physicality and to being good with one's hands. One thing that I would take from more contemporary codes of masculinity is the turn towards increased openness and communication. It is, I think, little by little becoming more acceptable for men to actually communicate how they're feeling to both the other men and women in their lives. And that's the one I think that I see as holding out great promise.
Masculinity, or our expectations of it, are socially constructed, and the future, according to La France, is a hopeful, more multiple expression of being masculine. Gender is indeed a complex thing. Join me next time in 2067 to learn more about the links between physics and aging. Claudine Gauthier and I talk about the power of physics and big data and what it means for future aging.
Thinking Out Loud 2067 is taking a break and will resume with more future talk in the fall. We'll be back April 26th with a Thinking Out Loud mini-series all about Expo 67. Join host Monica Gagnon for conversations with contemporary artists reimagining Montreal's iconic World's Fair. 2067 was created and produced by the Thinking Out Loud team at Concordia University. Thanks to Concordia's researchers, guests, and our host, Francine Pelletier. For more 2067 episodes and other Thinking Out Loud podcasts, check out our website, concordia.ca/TOA.